It's spoiler in time, our favorite time, because we do a lot of work on our other show, Chord Killers, and it's worth watching and listening to because we're talking about how. You can't do a thing without knowing how. So we're talking about how to get the devices. We're talking about how to get the streams. We're talking about the things that are coming out. But on spoiler in time, we get to have the fun of talking about the stuff we watch. The whole reason we do all that work is to watch the things and talk about them. On this episode, we're going to talk about Deadwood, episode 4 of season 3, Preacher, episode 4 of season 3. Yeah, that's right. Both episode 4 of season 3. It's the 304 show. I'm Tom Merritt. Of course, with me to talk about all this stuff is Brian Brushwood.
Man, I just realized we're going to be in sync on both of those shows going forward. We'll have there'll be some movies to talk through as well soon. But just those two items on the agenda today, but we have to check in.
Not just. Those two items fill our agenda today.
Okay, bro. All right. A meal unto themselves, but along with that, we got to get an appetizer, and that's the summer movie draft.
But now, can we just... So much to say about shows. We could just skip this. We don't have to talk about this part, right? We could skip the
congratulations check-in. To Team John Trekker.
A new front runner.
Yeah, $801 million. Now that all the money is coming in, and we haven't even gotten to Mission Impossible Fallout.
They could hit a million easy. In fact, they will hit a million. There's no way.
a billion.
Sorry.
No, I like the fact that you said it twice. Like, that's how confident you were. Yeah, I think Team John Trekker, I don't see any way anybody else is going to win. Now it's a question of just how severe a trouncing it's going to be. Well, congratulations to them.
I think Team GTNS might skate in to number two. Because Skyscraper just flopped. It really did. $25 million opening. Like,
can you finally tell us how you felt about the movie?
Oh yeah, finally I loved it. Right.
Man, if only you had been allowed contractually by law to have shared that, then maybe they would have done better.
my feelings about the movie were enjoy it for what it's gonna be. Plot's not gonna make any sense, it's gonna be full of holes. But just go in and say, I want to see Dwayne Johnson do a bunch of stunts and have a burning building. It's Die Hard meets Towering Inferno, and you will enjoy it. Every person I came out of that movie with was like, that was stupid fun. It was stupid, but it was fun. Sadly, didn't really get to tell anyone that. So $25 million is what you get out of Skyscraper. And, that's exactly why it only made $25 million, because they didn't let me tell anyone about it.
Man, that's why they call you the $300 million reviewer, because had you spoken, it would have been closer
only,
to that.
If only. So Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is the next film out for Chips Bitch, who are sadly in last place, and that's not going to make up the difference, although they do have Slender Man August 24th. That's probably not going to do it either. Impossible Fallout for John Trekker the week after that.
Do you remember the vibe where we thought, oh my God, Cargill's going to win? Because he had just so many movies. One of them has to be a surprise breakaway hit.
There was a vibe of like, you know, Cargill might take this because of the amount of content.
Yeah, turns out he bought all the $1 scratch-off lottery tickets instead of the weekly grand.
Which can happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still not a bad strategy. It just... Honestly, Team DTNS fell to the same problem, which was we went all in on Infinity War with the idea that we could get a couple other movies with what we had left, the $15 we had left, that would pad out. And those two movies did not pad out. The problem was that Team John Trekker got all the Costco wins.
Yep.
They got the $100 million out of Rampage. They got $50 million out of I Feel Pretty. They got $67 million out of Book Club. Like these, you know, yes, we knew Incredibles 2 would do well, but it did even better than expected. So well done them.
Yep.
All right. Let's move along into Preacher, where we get to see the devil. I was a little excited. We were finally going to get to see our two hell characters. I kind of
you thought we would see Arsface and Hitler run somewhere. Did not care because
I would not use the word disappointment. For a minute I thought we were going to get that little cherry on top of the ice cream, but we got other cherries on top of the ice cream. That ice cream was littered with cherries.
Satan as a middle manager is my favorite character in all of Preacher. That delivered so well. I loved everything about that. It reminded me of Liam Lynch did these short videos called the Hell O'Clock News to promote Tenacious D and the Pink of Destiny. And it felt like that, just this casual work environment, just in hell. It was amazing. And I love the fact that they gave us something right at the opening with it, and then they looped it back and said, hey, get ready. The shooter of saints, or whatever his name is coming back again.
The saint of killers. I think, right.
It was perfect. It was perfect.
Well, and also just the idea, that whole middle, like, you know, what's evil? Insincerity.
Yes.
Like, that's the most evil you can have is somebody who's just kind of insincere. And snotty. And
I want to know more about that actor, because there were brief moments I like totally.
That's he was in Walking Dead as kind of a minor schlep character. Shoot, because yeah, I looked him up. I wanted to find out more about him. He was in something else too that I can't remember now. It's on my head.
It, man, what a breath of fresh air that show. It's so fun. I realized I was trying to think of like, what is it that I love about Preacher? And I realized I don't really care where they go or if there's any resolution on anything. I don't have many questions that drive me outside of the, I'll see the opening of a scene and I'll be like, oh my God, this will be fun. That's the thought that just keeps happening. Like the moment Satan, he got like a sentence and a half in, and I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. And it was great. And
it never veers too far into seriousness, but it's never just silly.
Correct.
You know,
there it has teeth and it is impactful. And there are moments that you go, oh, wow, that was a lot. But I don't think I've ever felt sad watching this. I think I've been amazed. Or here's the other thing is
he was Detective Munn in Breaking Bad, Satan. That was the other role that I couldn't remember. One of the partners.
Oh, got it. I also realized that I don't think I've ever not thought about the production aspects or about the meetings that led to this or what the pitch or the writer's room or whatever. Like it is a piece of art that I don't think stands on its own because its mere existence is part of the art. Does that make sense? Like they're doing something extraordinary that I can't believe is happening.
Even when you see seams, they're pointing at them and going, hey, look, seams.
Yeah.
Well, we knew you were going to look at those. Like, they just know what they're doing.
Well, and like that moment that Tulip is just like, just kill them. And there's not going to be, I don't believe you because you're his ex-girlfriend and there's going to be some boomerang comeback voodoo curse thing that you're going to be. And it's like, I love all that. It's like, because that's what I'm thinking too.
And one of the places where there has been a minor disconnect for me is the flashbacks. Young Jesse, I was like, doesn't really seem like Jesse to me until this episode.
Yeah.
And that this episode, when he's having the actual interactions with the future Madam Boyd, and when he's doing the same top hat routine that adult Jesse is doing, all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's definitely Jesse. Like they win this one too, damn it.
My favorite bit was him saying, are you not entertained? And I was thinking like, that was that line from Gladiator. And then 5 minutes later, like, what are you doing this weekend? Like, oh, I don't know. I thought I'd go see Gladiator again.
Well, I thought it was the other way around. I thought he said he was going to see Gladiator and then he went outside and said, are you not entertained?
Oh, no. That was the first line you saw him say this entire thought. Like, he's just in the moment. Like, because the text on over the screen said back in the day. And the first thing he says is, are you not entertained?
Oh, okay. Because he says it again.
He does say it again.
After he kills his girlfriend's
correct
brother.
Correct. Yeah, okay, but you could tell this is what a 17-year-old does is right. He sees a movie, he has a favorite line, and he works it in like it's his, you know. And then so they started with that. They acknowledged that he was, you know, currently Gladiator on the mind or whatever.
Well, even that alternate version of events was so subtle in the difference, which basically all they did is said instead of having the brother plead for a hit, they had Jesse plead everything else happened exactly the same, and it made all the difference. Where you're like, oh yeah, I guess Jesse didn't want to kill him.
Yeah, and to be honest, that is the only difference. Is that that's the one part of the story that mattered, was whether or not he meant to, whether or not it was self defense, whether or not whatever. So many great little moments where they communicate stuff so quickly with body posture and framing and stuff. For example, that moment where, you know, his ex-girlfriend, Tulip, wakes up like, ex-girlfriend or whatever she said. And then he's like, what? He's like, don't worry about it. Go to sleep. And you're like, well, what happened to her? What happened to her? And the framing of the shot, you see the trunk open. And the only thing you get is that universal posture that we all know that says, chilling out, looking at a cell phone, and instantly you're like, oh, she doesn't care, and everything's fine. They
And also, she made a couple calls while she was in there to tell the Boyds to stay away.
Yeah. Well, they are so good at those nonverbal conversational cues, and they communicate so much, so easy. It's so fun. The two things on the plot side, and maybe I was a little dialed out at the end of the last episode, but I don't remember it being a big moment that he was under a spell that needed to be broken. He was just suddenly there. I thought he was, I guess I knew he was prisoner. And I guess what do you remember the exact scene where they communicated that he's now under a spell and trapped?
Who, Jesse?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was earlier in the season.
Okay.
When he comes to Angelville.
And he's like hypnotized or something. Isn't that what it
is? When he comes to Angelville, he asks for her support. He asks for her help. In bringing Tulip back. And she's like, well, you know what the cost is. And so in exchange for reviving Tulip.
Oh, that's right. It was the piece of the soul. Okay.
And he wants to get his soul back because then he thinks he can break that.
Yeah. And then he'll have Genesis and all that
Yeah. Because he can use Genesis for it. But yeah, the spell is what he exchanged in order to save Tulip.
There was a couple of moments, obviously the whole thing in the tomb, riffing on Fight Club, and I felt like they veered into winking about it, where there's that moment when, you know, he says a very close variation of, there's a scene in Fight Club where Tyler Durden looks around and says, I look around me and I see this, that, and the other thing. And what Tyler Durden is doing is riffing on surviving without testicles support group, like it's the same language. And there's like half a sentence or two thirds of a sentence that was so right on the nose that it made me feel like that they were more than just, you know, yeah, it's kind of Fight Club, but they were like, no, we're definitely doing exactly
homage
Fight
to
Club in this moment. Which the movie Old School did the exact same thing, because the movie Old School is all about old people going to starting a fraternity or whatever. Mm-hmm. They and then they have underground fighting and all that stuff. And in fact, the scene near the end of Old School, they shot at the exact same diner where the narrator sits down with Marla and they ask for clean food only. And anyway. It felt like another echo of that. Something where it was like,
I think it felt like that was intentional.
Yeah.
Sure. First of all, love that Tulip is like, well, no, I love Jesse. Like, I was a little nervous about a real love triangle. And I was like, no, Tulip loves Jesse. Great. That simplifies things. Awesome. What's Cassidy going to do about that? And he almost uses the potion, but then he doesn't. And he gets on the bus. And I'm like, well, we're not losing Cassidy. He's not going to just disappear. And of course, we see the woman from heaven is on the bus behind him. So that is going to be interesting to see how that all works back in.
Yeah. And there's also... I like the idea of him going off and having a solo adventure, and we get to see his own hero's journey, right? He's answering the call. He's going out. He'll come back a changed, better person.
Yeah.
And we'll get the team back together. Loved the byplay, the constant beating up and destroying and dismembering of Cassidy for his own good, like from a place of love. Jesse is chopping him into pieces and throwing
him. And he's
only
mildly annoyed because he's in a box, not because he's been chopped up. Yes. He's like, really? You're going to mail me?
God, I love this show. It's so much fun. Also, the set design on Satan's office. That office was rad with the not actual flames, but digital projections of flames on the floor everywhere. It was great. Preacher continues to be my favorite thing on television right now.
All right, let's move into our library show, Deadwood, episode 4, Full Faith and Credit. We get Alma opening a bank. We get Swearingen meeting with Hurst again and Tolliver as they lay out plans to consolidate power. First time Swearingen's been back in Hurst's presence since he lost a finger. And Bullock brokers a deal between Steve, racist Steve, and Hostetler, and Samuel Fields, the general who arrives back at camp.
Speaking of that moment, if there's ever a moment, there's one moment when, you know, Bullock is not handling very well the fact that both sides want the other side to sign first or whatever.
Right. He's getting frustrated, losing his patience.
And Saul, just as if it's the most patiently and kindly, as if it's the most obvious solution in the world, is like, you get two copies, you have them sign at the same time. And then you realize Saul should absolutely be mayor. And if that doesn't turn out to pass, oh, be very upset. Like, he is the justice that the camp deserves, you know, and Doc is the heart that keeps the camp beating. Still more of this coffin Doc biz. I don't know how long you think we're going to have Doc before he dies.
I don't think, well, I mean, he could die, actually. I'll be very upset if he dies because I'll miss that character, but it would be more in keeping with the reality of it if he did, because he is the heart and soul, and he saved Deadwood. Like, he literally, you know, with help from Jane and others, engineered the redemption of, like, Deadwood would be dead from plague if it wasn't for him. So,
yeah.
Yeah. They owe him, and I have a feeling he'll probably survive. But I wouldn't be surprised if he survives in a reduced capacity, which causes other problems.
Yeah. That moment that Jane gets the telegram, again, universally great acting from that actress. But that especially, I felt the surprise and joy and fear. Yeah. I don't know. Like I just feel so much from her. Still don't understand why Cy is on the show. Don't even understand why Joni's on the show at this point, outside of to just, you know, go back and forth on whether or not.
I feel like Joni, we're keeping Joni on the burner for something, right? And that something is going to have to do with the fact that she's going to sell to the theater company. But you're right. She's kind of, I'm waiting for Joni to pop back up as something important, because I know she can. And right now we're just kind of keeping her in place. Cy, on the other hand, you could have that entire Hurst scene without him. There's no reason for him to be there.
I very much enjoyed the direct address of a lingering thought I had when they decide at the end, like, okay, we'll build a schoolhouse, we'll sell to the theater people. And then there's this beat and they go like, shouldn't there like be room for a stage or something? Like, why do they want this place? And which is exactly what I was thinking. Like, that's not a real great building to hold plays at, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm curious about what's really going on with the theater company. I don't think it's everything that it appears to be.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Where are we at on a sort of, I mean, almost like a castrated Swearingen? We see him kind of get over his fears and get back and deal. Is this that deep black hatred simmering beneath the surface that's going to manifest itself in a big way? I'm guessing not, because I'm thinking the historical record probably doesn't show that Hurst was killed by Swearingen.
Yeah. I'm not going to sneak a peek at history to get a tip off on
spoilers.
That.
Spoilers. Yeah. I'm not going to look up the spoilers.
You're probably right. I mean, they could depart from history too. It wouldn't be the first time they've played with it. I feel like what we're seeing with Swearingen, though, is really interesting, because he's a guy who uses intimidation that he can back up, but prefers never to tussle. He does not want to fight. He thinks he can, with intimidation and smarts, avoid having to fight. And those are how he feels he wins. But he doesn't want people to think of him that way, because that would undermine his game of intimidation. It's intimidation and smarts. It's both of them, not just one or the other. And what's happened is Hurst intimidated him, which is why he doesn't want anyone to know he's missing the finger, because that undermines him. And the only way for him to react is to fight. He can't just intimidate or use smarts on Hurst. And I think that's why he's so frustrated and angry, because he's like, damn it, I'm actually going to have to take action. He maneuvered me into the thing I don't like to do, the thing that I'm not as good at, which is direct action. And so the question I'm having is Swearengen capable of the direct action, or is he just intimidation and smarts? Are we going to see him pushed over the edge and do something, like you say, that might not agree with history?
Yeah. Also, I think I've seen just about enough of Swearengen having a therapy session to somebody performing sexual acts on him. Like,
yeah.
It lacks the surprise or novelty. And I'm like, am I supposed to root for him to get through this? Or
we could use a couple other situations. I get it. He's doing a Shakespearean soliloquy, right? And the first time they did it, we're like, well, of course, because it's a whorehouse. But yeah, it's time to change his approach, to change his technique, if you will.
Which is, of course, is one complaint about that. By the way, your observation of EB as narrator of a fool is a. I don't know if it's 100% what they intended or whatever, but I really like it, and I tried it on for size, and it felt right the entire time watching this episode, so that made that worked for me.
Yeah, because he is just kind of a chorus off in the corner, and now enters the, totally. Well, cool. I'm glad that worked.
I got a strange thrill out of seeing Bullock hold hands with Mrs. Bullock as they sat there in bed. And then, and also Ellsworth, I'm really, like, I'm starting to really cheer for Ellsworth to successfully woo his wife
Alma.
Could he be any more adorable playing checkers with the kid and all that
the
stuff?
The only risk there is that he is getting frustrated with the situation he agreed to and somehow transgresses the agreement. But if that doesn't happen, then yeah, it's pretty darling.
And could he look any more different? This gentleman about town, this one of the wealthiest in Deadwood, so different from the crazy prospector who was clearly going to get murdered in season one. It was amazing.
Yeah. Talk about a journey and growth for a character. That's awesome. All right, folks, we will continue watching Deadwood. We've only got, 8 more episodes left in this season. So stick around. Keep watching with us. We'll get to the next one next week, as well as Preacher and whatever else comes our way. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon. If you are a supporter, you get these episodes a little earlier, a couple days earlier, patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll spoil you again next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.